Shouldn't the onus be more on the competitors to hide stuff than people to think they're being bad for trying to...
Yeah, I agree. I agree, but you know, like I've had covers in the bow of my boat at Geelong for the first half of the week, hiding my wallet. Not that it did me any good at the end, but anyway, I was hiding it for a while. And the problem is you know, the class is just not like that. Unfortunately, they're just, you're seen as a bit of a tosser probably if you try to hide something, because particularly if you don't win, because then you know.
But no, I just think it's interesting because I think. I was actually surprised in a way that, not that we don't develop faster, but there isn't more variation.
Yeah, but I still think that if you've got a good development, you get a regatta out of it. Realistically, that's how it works at the moment. If there's a, what would be the dial that was copied after regatta, or what would be a wand or something that AMAC would have done, or whatever it might be, I think you get a regatta. So you'll
if
block
it wins.
No, not even then. Not even then. The dial got copied, didn't have a wand.
Yeah,
a dial never want a regatta, and now it's
okay. Okay, so let me. The dial's a great example. The dial got copied by a couple of people, or people in
instantly,
the
yeah,
instantly, right? But it didn't get copied en masse until it was proven. So people take
a while.
So people take
well,
a while.
It took for somebody to make it almost available for them to buy.
So, but yeah, well.
True.
That's, yeah. Oh, well.
And that's the thing. You know, I do agree with you. I mean, there's a thing in the class at the moment is that people like to buy things that are fast rather than developing themselves.
So yeah, at the moment I'm building a new hull. I've been away from full development for a while. You're in the same boat. You know, you're developing a new hull. But we've both got ideas on how you can both separately, independently. I'm not saying we collaborate on this or anything, but I can guarantee that I've got ideas on how you could take a Mark II foil and make another foil that's faster. Right, so you can because you can look at a Mark II and say this is my known baseline that I have to beat, and you understand okay it's this size flap, this size span, you those sort of details which you can easily find out.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to improve
exactly
product.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm not saying I could come up with it from scratch, nothing. But what I am saying is the bar has moved, and straight away you go, well, I no longer. Whereas when I designed my previous foil, it was Prowler clone. Be as fast as a Prowler. Right? Now it's be faster than a Mark II if you're building a foil. If you're going to not build a foil that's slower than a Mark II, what's the point?
Yeah.
Right? So, but there's the benchmark. So what I'm a bit surprised is that you don't have Mark II owners, particularly the fact given the Mark II and the Blade Runner is a perfect configuration for development. The cheapest foils, you can build half a foil. You haven't got to worry about
Two
joints.
Look, there are people doing this. I think you're being a bit harsh.
I'm not being harsh.
Well, how many foils have Boris tried it?
I know Boris done it.
Scott's
done it. Scott's
doing a different foil. I mean, people out there. I'm sure there's plenty of people in the UK to do
it. So what I'm talking about is as a percentage of the class. This is what I'm talking about, right? There's definitely people that do it, without question.
Yeah, as a percentage, most people don't.
Okay, so again, drawing the parallel to this conversation to Formula One, every single team on the grid in Formula One is doing it constantly.
First impressions are important and lasting. Sometimes they can even make or break a deal. Do you find it difficult to brand your business? Are you sick of wasting time and money researching for design agencies? You want a logo that's unique and affordable. There is a simple and effortless online solution that will enable your business, big or small, to gain attention. In three easy steps, you can own a great-looking and original design without breaking the bank. Step 1. Browse through our extensive logo gallery. Step 2. Purchase your chosen logo. Step 3. Download your logo design instantly. You own exclusive rights to the logo, and additional changes can be made, such as colour or font, for a small cost. You won't find a better quality logo service at better prices on the web. Pucker, we decided that a great logo doesn't need to cost you a fortune.
some better than others, obviously, some going backwards, right? But in the Moth class, which is a development class, it's probably a single digit or no more than 20% of the class that is actively developing.
Yeah.
That's what I find surprising.
I think it could be a time constraint. I mean, do you spend that Saturday that you've been waiting for all week long developing your new foil, or do you go Saturday? And that's the trade-off. You know, you've got... You know, I always like to look at it. You've got X amount of time available in your life to your moth sailing, because you're working midweek, most of us do. So then, you know, you've got your Saturday and Sunday. How do you want to spend it? Well, you know, do I want to sail 2 days, or do I want to boat develop, or do I want to do 50-50? You know?
And
you've got to make the most use out of your time.
Absolutely, but here's the thing. It's like, you know, I'm going to go back exactly the opposite point that I said on a previous show, where we said that for the majority of people, they could be sailing a prowler and still be as competitive as they're going to be in a Mark II, right? Like the skipper makes a huge difference. I'm going to go against that point and say, I think there's a lot of people who have the same level of performance, and they would get a bigger gain by developing their current package. So,
well, I think that's where you've got to make a decision. You know, at what point, what is slowing you down? Is the fact that you don't have the latest and greatest slowing you down? Or is it just sailing? And when you get to that point, that's when you make a decision.
My point isn't the latest and greatest. My point is something that's better
than what's already available.
Than the other guy. So,
yeah,
for example, if I'm racing against you in a Mark II, right, we're both sailing Mark IIs, right, and you're better at the course than I am, how can I make that gain? Can I go and practice? If I want my sailing skill to improve more than you, I have to put a significant percentage difference of time on the water. Okay? So, for example, if you're sailing 1 day a week, if I want to beat you, I'm going to probably have to spend a year of sailing 2 days to get my skill level up. You know what I mean? Like, there's a time difference there. But if I can get, say, 10% more boat speed through development and spend the time on the water.
Yeah, you've got to figure out where your gains are. There's actually a really good software, and I'm not doing a plug here, but there's Emmett and a couple of the other...
Emmett Lazic,
World Moth Champion a few years, a while ago now, I guess. He developed a software with Renato Mozzella and a couple of other guys as well. It's interesting because that software was developed for people that have some sort of a goal in life, whether it be to get more work-life balance or to win an Olympic gold medal. And you can kind of, it's basically a pie chart, and you can prioritize the things that you want to do to get to your goal. So, you know, if your goal is to become a world champion, you might say, look, boat handling, time on the water, boat development, strategy, you know, you might do a breakdown of crucial aspects of your campaign and how much time or what score you give yourself out of all of those. And I actually did a similar thing when I tried to improve my performance. You look at the areas and what do you score yourself out of 10 on boat handling? What do you score yourself out on out of 10 on tactics? And then based on that, you might want to focus on a particular area. So you've got the website up here now.
Yeah, it's goalscape.com. Goalscape.com.
Yeah. So it's quite an interesting tool, but see, that's kind of what you're saying, really, is where do you focus your efforts? Is it on boat development, or is it on sailing on the water?
Yeah, and what I find surprising, if you look, not my level of the class, if you look at the pointy end of the fleet, where are the Mark II sailors?
I think most of the people are spending time on water.
But
let me rephrase that. Most of the elite sailors, and by elite, I mean Olympic.
How?
Those guys are just sailing and tuning and refining the equipment they already have. They're not really going out there and building foils.
No, I know, but how much faster are they going to be? So if you've got Tom Slingsby, Nathan Outeridge, okay, straight line, you know, boat handling, how much is one of those guys going to gain on the over the other by spending 2 hours more than the other on the water?
Yeah, but I think guys like that are typically not your tinkerers. You know, to go and do boat development, you've got to go and get your hands dirty. You've got to go down and maybe grind some carbon at some stage and breathe a bit of carbon dust. And, you know, it's not nice. And it's a lot of people don't have the skills or they don't really want to touch
it. So I'm thinking it's surprising that that hasn't happened. The other thing which I'm surprised, which hasn't happened a bit more formally, is almost like mini teams forming. So perfect example of what you just said, right? They don't want to go and do it. So it's almost like not surprising that you've got someone who does like doing that working with someone who's a really good sailor. So one, because I think if you look at, again, using another parallel to motorsport, if you look at most teams, like most two car teams, you'll have one driver who's a really, really good on track racer, and that might be the junior up and coming guy in the team, and they'll have one guy who's really good at understanding car setup and car development.
Yeah.
And you can't have one sort of without the other.
Yeah. I think there's definitely the team thing happening. I mean, yeah, I don't want to sort of name people, but there's definitely pockets now which are appearing of little groups of people that are doing their own projects.
Yeah.
And I think that's really good.
And so it's like, so I suppose if you're like a sail training partner is one part of it, but also the boat development side.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, I'm surprised we don't see more boats where they're out, you know, every Saturday. They're not just going out and training, but two-boat training. I mean, proper two-boat training, as in identical equipment, identical this, but change one thing and see which goes faster. I don't think I know anyone that actually does does formal two-boat training.
Yeah, I do agree. I mean, there's probably not enough of that, but...
Yeah, it's time.
It's time.
Because I was reading a blog post by Phil Oligario, who basically was after sailing in the Parkstone open on the weekend.
May I just say, that's been an absolutely awesome blog to read.
I think absolutely. I think
the Ninjario, it's been fantastic.
Well, it comes down to the class rule that if you're building, you have to blog about it. And you haven't. Why not, Luca?
Enough time. It comes back to this time issue we're talking about.
Well, if you blog, you lose.
Do you go and blog, or do you spend that time designing a new port?
No, I think the way that Phil did blog about it was a little ideal. And suppose that he would go and do the work and blog when it's finished. So I think, you know, the whole blogging as you go, it's hard, particularly it's quite hard, particularly when you're actually, I suppose one of the reasons why you don't see step-by-step of guides on how to build things is because you can't exactly be up to your armpits in resin and then go and get a camera and take a photo. Yeah, so you can do what my brother and I did, we put a camera on a tripod and do a time-lapse photography, that's all fine, but you can't sort of go, step one, do this, oops, go get a camera.
But typically you're finishing at like 11 o'clock at night, and it's a work night, the last thing you want to go is go on your computer and talk about it. You just want to go to bed.
Exactly. So I think there should be more of that. The other thing I think that's interesting is whenever there's an interesting void in when people talk about things when they make stuff, and that's things like, and I know I've done it as well, that's things like laminate schedules. These things seem to be, you know, because remember, I know what I haven't blogged about laminate schedules or is because it's my guess. I'm no professional, so I don't want to give someone a bum steer and say, oh, I built a foil and I used 6 layers of 200 and da 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 da. No, it's actually a good thing I didn't, because I got it completely wrong with a couple of foils. But I'm surprised that, so for example, you know, Phil's building a Ninja, and Mike may have told him in confidence, but I'm surprised that most people don't go and say, yeah, okay, I'm using 200 of this and this sort of foam.
I think there's a bit of trade secrets there too. I think, fair enough with the home builders, I mean, for maybe for your reasons, people wouldn't share because they don't want to destroy somebody else's project as well.
No, that's the main reason.
But as far as manufacturers go, you wouldn't really share those set of secrets. You wouldn't expect John Isler to come out and tell you what he uses in a prowler.
No, absolutely. But I suppose my point is, if you're a home builder and you want a home build, that information is hard, and you've never built a boat before.
It's difficult to come
across. It's very hard to come across. Oh, you know, where should I put reinforcing patches? And
I think a lot of the time it's just made up on the day, like, you know, 2 layers of carbon, that's
just chuck it on. So yeah, I think that's one thing I think I would find, I wouldn't say disappointing, I understand why the information's not there, but I think it would be more helpful on people.
It would be, yeah. If you could. Well, actually, funny enough, is that there isn't actually that much information out there for home building a modern moth, you know, with foam sandwich and carbon. And it's been fairly well documented with Phil's plywood boats. But there actually isn't a guide how to build yourself a foam sandwich boat, is there?
There is.
There is?
The one that I wrote.
What, you, it's a...
Really?
Yeah. Full-on guide.
Not a full-on guide. Because they don't get laminate schedules. If you go to my blog, and just find online, on the very top of the page, there's a link.
So having said... See, you said not long ago that everything you did was basically wrong. And now you're saying there's a guide on your website. Yes,
absolutely. But I didn't give laminate schedules. So that's what I'm saying.
That part was wrong?
Yeah, so what I'm saying
so
is...
it looks all right, but it just doesn't hold it together.
Now, what I'm saying is... Oh, here, it's right on the top. There's the home build link on the top, which is links to my article on how to build your mould.
This, I wasn't aware of this, Bruce. This is pretty incredible. It goes back to the 80s with that photo, doesn't it?
Yeah. So that's, this is
the old message book.
So this is photos and information that I pulled together from building virtual reality. So my first narrow skiff back.
I like your Make the Cradle one. See, I'll comment on this because Make the Cradle, once the house is cured, you should cover it in plastic and make the cradle for the boat. It's very, not very descriptive, is it?
No.
Personally, I cut out blah, 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 blah.
Chop straight mat, make a trolley.
See, you've got four lines of making the cradle. But what do you reckon? It's probably about 20 hours to make a cradle?
Yeah, probably.
Your four lines will cut it.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying. Well, you know, what do people want to know? Like, they can... There's heaps of cradles to copy. Yeah, there's like three paragraphs on how to get out of the mould.
It's funny. I like reading this because it says removing your hull from the mould is relatively simple.
No, this
is the relatively in there is probably because there was a fuck up and one got stuck in there, didn't it?
No. To be fair, now in this particular article, I'm not talking about a female moulded boat.
Okay.
I'm talking about how to build a. Again, this is a technique which I don't see very often, which I think most home builders they build a plug, but make a full female mould. Building a foam boat over a male mould, an open male mould, is a really simple way.
And you're still quite for that idea.
Absolutely.
You've done both, but you still prefer doing a male mould?
I think as a home builder, you'll have a lot bigger chance of success using a male mould because you don't have the issues where you're trying to do a big bang label all three skins. You can take time.
You can take time with your female mold. You can just do the other skin first.
You can, but you're not working down in confinement, sort of up in the bow and all that sort of stuff. You can actually, I think you can have a lot more control over the laminate if you actually do over a male mold.
Yeah.
If you're a professional and know what you're doing, yeah, sure, your female mold's bloody brilliant, or if you're using pre-preg. But I think if you've never built a boat before, you can build a male moulded foam boat on an open mould, as I talk about in the document, really simply. Because you don't have to worry about fairing the mould. You've got to fair the mould, but it's, you know, releasing a screw here or there. It's not hours and hours of sanding. And so then you put your foam down, you glue all the foam up, and you get that through. Seal it up, and then you put your.
And I guess, you know, and I guess you don't have to build a female mold. That's the
big no, there's no female mold. So I think I think it took us literally 10 hours to build a male mold from start to finish, because you don't have to cover it, and it's designed in a way where you've got. So I designed virtual reality full scale on the floor in the hallway using battens full scale. So I designed it full scale, predating computers. And then you print out, so you basically jigsaw around the frames, and they were designed so the stringers sit on top. They're not recessed, and because the stringers sit on top, you can, when you want to fair it, you can just tweak the screws that hold into the mould to refair the shape, so you can do that, so you can actually fair it up pretty easily. You've got a lot of margin for error. If you need to come out, you can just block it up or not. So that's actually doesn't have to be super accurate, because you can literally look along it and put a batten alongside and make sure it's all fair and true.
So it probably took a lot less time to build back then.
Oh, heaps.
Because you didn't have to... computers, they didn't have to blog about it.
No, they didn't have to blog about it. It was a high school at the time.
Right.
So there's a lot more distractions going on, like going to school every day. But yeah, it didn't take all that long to build. And I'm surprised more people don't. Now it's like they either tend to go the ply route, Or the female molding route. There is a middle road in between.
There's a few mods available now that people can use. I think that's what's driving it. Is, well, there's a female mod you can just...
Oh, absolutely. They're using, like, you know, there's one in Sydney, there's one Ninja in the UK. There's one in the UK.
There's a Prowler one in New Zealand, I think.
Yeah, so here's an interesting question for you. There's a lot of tooling. There was a ton of moth tooling in the world. There's perfectly good tooling that must be gathering dust.
Well, there's one particular brand that I'm thinking of when you say that a lot of good tooling just sitting there.
Well, I can think of two. The
Blade Rider is what I was thinking.
So, yeah, but there's the ton of, there's a lot of tooling doing.
What is happening with Blade Rider? Does anybody know if they still exist?
Well, according to an email on the US list, some parts were shipped in the last couple of weeks.
But they haven't made any boats yet. So they're servicing the market, basically.
They're servicing parts, but...
It would be good to know where they stand, because I'm sure there's plenty of people that are chasing parts. I know there's a lot of people that cannot get a hold of, you know, on the wing bars and that sort of thing. There's almost a market for somebody to go and build foils that fit on Blade Rider verticals and
what's happened to all the tooling? Like, is it just... what happens to all the Velociraptor tooling?
The problem is a lot of stuff will get obsolete within time, you know. It's... the hull probably might be still alright, but you certainly wouldn't want the foil tooling, would you?
The verticals, absolutely.
What would you keep?
The hull molds, deck molds, foredeck molds. The hull's fine. You might cut it down, but the hull itself is basic hull shape's fine.
Hmm.
It's not the newest, but
you wouldn't really.
Okay, so if you look at what Mike Cook's doing, okay, he's got his latest version of his mold. Right, so he's got the latest ninja that he's got. He's leasing out his old mold for people to build boats, right? So for people to build their own boats, which is what you're talking about here, because you're talking about I'll hire tooling to build the boats, people aren't going to care that it's a Blade Rider.
Yeah, true. If it became an association mold or something like that.
Yeah, if I'm building a boat, I'm not going to care if it's... Look at the Gilmore, right? I'm building now. The mold's still fine, and we're just popping the boat out at full height and getting the saw out and modifying it.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have to go and retool the whole thing, and you can do exactly that with a Blade Rider as well.
Let's hope it comes back one day and somebody gets to use it. Because at the moment, I think it'd be standing still for quite a long time.
Well, there's going to be a few molds around. Like, there's obviously... I think there was one in Australia, at least, that was used for doing, like, dev work, particularly for the FX.
There was one in Perth, I think.
The bulk of the molds would be in China.
Yeah, and there's a few, because they did change the hull shape.
There's been multiple... There has to have been multiple molds.
Yeah. Maybe one day we'll find out where they are. It'd be good. I mean, what about the Velociraptor? I mean, that's another project that hasn't really gone anywhere.
I think some of the tooling was for sale, but where's it gone? Is it sitting around in someone's shed that's not being used?
See, this is kind of pretty interesting because not many people know about this. There's been a moth that was, I assume, designed and built by a guy in the UK.
Yep.
And nobody's really blogged about it. Nobody's really posted any links to the website. You've come across... How did you come across it again?
Someone tweeted about it.
Right. Because you've sent me the link and I've gone, wow, there's a moth that was built and I've never heard about this guy. But it looks pretty good. It looks like a bit of a Mark II client, I guess.
So the boat we're talking about is built by Maguire Boats. Maguire Boats are in Hampshire, Lymington? I'm going to get hammered by the UK people for that. In the UK. And it's called the Manta.
It looks really good. I think...
So the URL is www.maguire, M-A-G-U-I-R-E, boats.com. So they've got a design page. So if you go to the... I'll edit this out. If we go to the design page for it, where they list the features. So they've got a design page for the boat where they list the features as being low windage aero wing bars, low windage foredeck, small hull volume. It's all pretty standard stuff these days. Low windage.
Look, no, I do have an interesting thing here. And I don't know. I'm going to be the devil's advocate here because
what the plates?
No, I'm going to go to this thing here. Hull design features. Blah, 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 blah. Lightweight hull construction. 7.5 kilos painted for a hull.
No, you know, my hull's 2.5 kilos.
7.5 kilos. I'm sorry, I just don't buy that. There's just no way you can build a hull that's 7.5 kilos painted that's structurally sound.
Yeah.
Of this volume. Like, this is a smaller hull, but it's not ridiculously small. It's still probably 30 centimetres high in the freeboard. And it is just ridiculous. You cannot build a structurally sound hull that's 7.5 kilos in weight. I really doubt that anybody can build a 26 kilo moth. And I'd love to be proven wrong. I would love to get somebody to put on the scales and say, Luca, you didn't have a clue what you were talking about. We've built a 26 kilo moth. Because, and the reason I'm so adamant about this is because I've just built one with Nomex, and which is a third of the weight of the foam, and our shell was 3.9 kilos, and that is just ridiculously light. That's without the transom in it. You just cannot build it for any less, because otherwise, what, you're having dry cloth instead of resin in it? Like, okay. Why are you
let me put it this way. I don't think you should build a boat that weighs less than 10 kilos.
You shouldn't, because it probably won't be particularly stiff. But even if you did, 7.5 kilos for a painted hull, when paint alone weighs close to a kilo, you're talking about a 6.5 kilo construction
for
the shell. And you know, the shell weighs 4 kilos. Let's say you use Nomex and you come out with a 4 kilo shell. Yeah. The floor weighs 2 kilos. There's your 6 already.
Where's your frames?
Where's your frames? Where's your half a kilo centerboard case? Where's your... The plates in your centerboard case would probably weigh 200 grams.
Tubes.
Fordeck. It'd be 400 grams worth of fordeck when it's laminated in. It just adds up, and I don't know. They're just claims at this stage, I guess. But I do love the project because he's got some really neat carbon work here, and good on him for doing it.
So they're using the foils that he used, made by someone else. I'm guessing Mark too.
Well, I think at the moment he's just got Blade Rider foils, but look at the photos. But we don't really know too much about the project. It would be good to actually find out a little bit more about it.
Well, I did request them for more info, and they didn't give me anything. They didn't reply back, so...
Yeah, see, the thing is that I wonder if this is the... Ovington boat that we talked about a while ago. If I could take a guess, I think that would be it, because... I don't know, it looks like it's Ovington premises, doesn't it? That's a bit of a giveaway. Maybe not. But anyway, it seems to have some sort of a link to the Ovington moth. But it is interesting, and it's even more interesting that it's got orders, because obviously it's a goer.
And there's a photo of it sailing, nonetheless.
Yeah. So I'm sure the UK guys will laugh at this and they'll go, oh, we've known about this for the last 6 months.
Yeah,
it's been out, and you don't have a clue what you're talking about down under because it's so isolated, but we actually haven't seen any of this before. It's impressive. It looks good. So what else do we have, Bruce? We must have some other news.
Do we? Well, we've had some regattas in the UK and Australia. The Mike Lennon dominated in the Parkstone Open, apparently, according to what you read online. That's what you can do. And we also had another warm-up regatta on Lake Quarry over the weekend. I don't know the full details. All I know is that Nathan still appears to be the man to beat.
So you sound like you're quoting somebody.
No, I'm just going to say, apparently he's still... I think he's going to be hard to beat.
But no, it's good. I mean, I'm sure he'll be the one to beat. I don't know. I still stick to my guns.
Yeah, no, I think so too. I still think John Harris will be quick, but I think Nathan will be the guy to beat.
Really? You changed the tune?
No, I always...
What happened?
No, I said... No, I said, to be clear, that we down will be one of the guys. So I think it will be, you know, one of those two. Yeah, no, it's going to be hard. There's no question about that.
Yeah.
And we come
I think because Belmont's so shifty as well, you know, tactics are going to come into this. It's not just a bike speed race. Belmont can be tricky. You get, you know, local knowledge goes a long way too.
Yeah.
There is some other news, Bruce, and that's Felix's blog post about the Assassin. What are your thoughts? Because
my thoughts are those thoughts should be kept private and between the two parties. Maybe I'm no longer an Assassin reseller blog post, and that's it. Like, literally two lines. That's it. Step away.
But not to the RTD dirty laundry. Yeah. I thought it was a bit much as well. I think, you know, reading it, I was surprised at the level of information that was provided on the internet. You know, I download this letter from our solicitor here and see that email that I've sent there. And, you know, it is, I think, going a little bit too far. I do applaud Simon Proper for asking Doug to take it off the website, because I think, you know, the IMCA website should be about positive things for the class and promoting it in a good way.
Yeah.
And this certainly isn't a positive thing for the class. Let's get rid of it off the news page at least. And
There is one unfortunate victim in this. John Islett. The similarity... and the reason I say this is because John Islett's company is Fastercraft, right? Fast Art with an A. And most people don't realise that the business name for the Assassin boats is Fast
Craft. Probably, people that aren't more sailors will probably...
There is nothing to do with each other, and I'm sure there's one person out there that's gone, what John... So, it has nothing to do with John Arnott at all. The names are merely coincidental.
Yeah, it's the Assassin. But look, I mean, I'm certain that... Yeah, there seems to be some level of unprofessionalism. But it's just a right and wrong way of dealing with.
There's a thing called commercial inconfidence.
Yeah,
it's plain non-disclosure. You don't go there.
Yeah. So anyway, we won't go there either too much because we don't think it's particularly happy topic.
I'm not going to talk about it at all.
All right. So what else, Bruce?
If you've got a 16-year-old daughter, and she goes, Daddy, I want to sail around the world single-handed.
Oh, don't get me started on
this. Yeah. What are you going to do? Oh, no worries. Yeah. Hey, and why don't we sail through the Southern Ocean in the middle of winter?
Yeah, it is ridiculous, isn't it? I just cannot believe that these parents can be so freaking irresponsible.
I personally won't even sail offshore. For a day, not even just going for a sail. Oh, I wouldn't say never, but that doesn't appeal to me.
The ultimate, it just frustrates the crap out of me because, you know, they look like heroes when the kids, if the kids come back, and they are, you know, the best parents on this planet for letting them realize their dreams. But if the kid gets killed along the way, the father will probably go to jail because he's just been an idiot.
And everyone talks about, you know, oh, there's lots of safety things like EPIRBs, and they have their ditch bag, and they've got their life rafts and all that sort of stuff. I don't know about you, but if you're in a life raft out on the Indian Ocean or any ocean, really, yes, you might have all the greatest freaking electronic gadgets in the world for telling the world where you are. Your chances of survival still drop pretty quickly.
Yeah, and the thing is, they always go, you know, it's the person themselves, and, you know, you can't say that 16-year-olds are too young, but you cannot argue with the point that you don't mature. You know, your brain doesn't develop until your 20s.
You're not mentally
stable enough.
I think the age issue is irrelevant.
I think the age issue is
I think the too, whole but, the like, whole thing about like Tony Bullmore as well, the whole... thing about sailing single-handed
is nuts.
In ocean is crazy.
It is crazy.
And I think who's even crazier is these French guys that do it in those huge multi-hulls. That's even more nuts.
But the thing is that, you know, problem is that as a young person, I just don't think you're mentally developed enough to handle that sort of pressure and coping with being out there by yourself. And you can. Some people can do it and they come back and it's all fine and dandy. But as a parent, you certainly wouldn't want your kid doing it. You'd just have to be nuts if you did. But if there had to be something that was wrong with you, surely.
Pressure? What pressure? This is like... It's not as though you can only sleep for 45 minutes for, like, a year, where the longest time you can sleep is 45 minutes continuously.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've had kids. Well, no, you haven't, but anyone that's had kids know well, that sleep deprivation is just... Even with just sleeping 3 hours at a time is horrendous, let alone... And the the reason why you can only sleep for 45 minutes is that's the time it takes for something to come from the horizon to your position. So yeah. The longest you can sleep is 45 minutes.
Yeah, look, it's great that she's made it, and I'm very happy.
Well, she hasn't made it.
Well...
Are you thinking of Jess Watson? Just talking Watson. About
the other girl.
The US.
Oh, that's another story, yeah. That's if it ends up in tears, but... Yeah, our thing is just absolutely crazy.
It's just like...
I don't blame the kids. The kids are just...
If you'd be given the chance to jump off school for a year and go and live out your life adventure, well, of course you would.
Of course.
But, like, finish your schooling first. How about you finish schooling, you earn for and pay for the boat yourself? Get a job, pay for the boat, and then do it.
Oh, well... Maybe one day, Bruce. But I tell you what, we've talked a lot about the boat work and development.
The last couple of shows.
Over the past, well, I'm speaking more in particular in this show, but but anyway, there is another development that we haven't talked about, and that's the Bethwaite Moth.
Oh yes.
And there's even been a photo of something on Sailing Anything that people are trying to guess that it's a Bethwaite Moth. Did you see that?
No.
There's a photo of a. What I think is a trimaran, but some people are saying it's a new Bethwaite moth.
Right.
Because the concept itself is quite different. Like, it is meant to be... it was originally meant to have a similar configuration to the 1449, which is the canard on the bow and the mainfall all the way back.
Yeah.
And I heard today, actually, funny enough, is that they've gone back to the sort of a moth-style configuration with two foils. On the really? Centre bottom, surprise, surprise.
Something is proven.
But anyway, it's a different concept, and I haven't seen the boat, but I've heard a fair bit about it from the people that have. And it is different. It's meant to be quite a lot wider. It's more like the Fett skiff, or probably not that wide, but low freeboard,
yeah.
Like all Bethwaite boats, I guess. And,
well, it's going to be the same lines, isn't it?
It'd probably be a scale of 49 or something.
No, because if you read Frank Bethwaite's book, every boat Bethwaite's make is the same hull lines, tweaked and flattened and remoulded to fit the shape. So there was an old scow that I think Mark Bethwaite designed, and that became the Taser, and then the Taser was stretched, and that became the Bethwaite.
Yeah, they developed the same concept
They're literally the same hull lines, but it got scaled down for the 49 and the 29 or something. It would make logical 49 sense.
49 hull instead of that hull.
So it would make logical sense that if they're going to design a hull and you're Bethwaite, you would
start off with a 49
the same lines you use for every other
thing. Yeah, I'm sure it's got some similarities. It would have to. But I'll tell you what similarity: solid wings.
Like 49, a solid wing.
Yeah.
Mm.
It's different.
Could work.
I think it'd be heavy, wouldn't it? I mean, all Bethwaite boats are heavy.
They're not built like a moth. They're not built for... The rules are different, right? If you're designing your own class, lightweight is not something you do. Not when you can just whack a more sail area. It's a cheap way to build a boat.
Mm.
I'd look at the cost of a laser compared to a moth, right?
Yeah, that's right. But it is interesting because they've got a lot of knowledge, and it'd be interesting to see what kind of concept they come up with, because Julian's not really the type of guy that copies a hell of a lot. He's a lateral thinker, he's an independent soul, and he'll go away and he'll come up with a slightly different idea.
He's the sort of guy that would not stop developing.
No, he'd keep going, and that's great for the class. You know, wouldn't it be great for somebody to come up with a completely radical concept and see if they can make it work? You wouldn't want to do it because you'd lose a lot of money over it.
No, you wouldn't.
But you'd want to see it, wouldn't you?
I don't think you'd do it commercially. I think it's interesting, the Maguire Moth and the Newfie and...
Well, that's all pretty conservative development.
It's interesting how many people are jumping into these markets to try and make money.
Yeah, we talked about this pre-show, and we almost were going to go down this way.
Yeah, it's. I don't know why you go into the business of making moths. I really don't.
Yeah, we discussed this, and then we said, but you know, Mechonica seems to be doing all right. Like they've got a fast design, and the quality isn't too bad, and people are buying them, and they've done really well, I think. But at the same time, you know, you look at the Blade Rider venture, and there was just
somebody
lost a lot of money.
You don't really know, but it's. I think any traditional business, like I look at less of it now, Apple with iPhones, right? You have a percentage of stock where people buy them, they return them, or they're faulty, and you have to support them, and there's a support overhead, and there's a sales and marketing cost, and all that sort of things. By the time you factor the normal business running costs in,
so many things that could go wrong. You know, a little from the smallest thing, like the push rods could start pulling out the flaps, and you're going to have to replace maybe 100 foils or something. You know, just so many things.
But you can get a bad batch of carbon, or some faulty resin, more likely.
Yeah.
And you being a manufacturer, you won't know unless you break every foil before it goes out. You're not going to know. A customer will break it.
That's the problem. This is a manufacturer. And, you know, it's very difficult sometimes to test the product properly. And now that it will be 100% fine when it gets out there. You can do all your testing and stuff can still break later.
So I'm very interested with people like, you know, Maguire's and those sort of guys. If you're an experienced boat builder and you're just starting to do moths as well, we're already building X skiffs or cherubs or, you know, 12-foot skiffs or whatever. Oh, and I'll do a moth. Fair enough. You know, you obviously, you understand the boat building game. You understand what's involved. You're not just, but if you're someone who sits back and goes, oh, well, that looks like a good idea, and you're going to put money into it, I think that's a...
Well, it's easy to see what prompts them. You know, the class is booming. It's sensational. You know, everybody's excited about it. People want to get into it. So obviously there's going to be demand for new parts. And as that, people say, oh, well, great opportunity to go and actually make some money out of this, and it's my passion, and I'll go ahead with it. But yeah, it's, in reality, I think it's really, really hard. You have to have a very good formula, like the Konica at the moment, to actually come out on top.
So here, I'm going to give Bruce's advice for a moth startup.
Well, for a guy that wants to fund
this. No. If you've got this crazy idea that you want to build moths as a commercial business, build one part. So don't build boats, build foils. Then when you can successfully build foils and have a foil that is faster than... So if say buy Mark II, build new foils for Mark II. When you can build production quality foils for the existing boat that are faster and sell them and make money, then go to the next level.
No, I don't know if I'd agree with that.
What?
I think you just... I reckon you just need to have a good understanding of the class. I think that's fundamental. You need to understand exactly how the class works. And then you'll have a much better chance of succeeding. Because I think some ventures in the past have gone pear-shaped because the investors didn't quite understand the boats.
Like, say, for example, Velociraptor.
Maybe, yeah.
We don't really know.
But I think to some degree, yeah. Because, you know, they're difficult to build. There's a lot of detail work. Problem is that because the designs keep evolving, you constantly have to change the tooling to keep up with whatever's currently trending. You know,
so
you just have to evolve and so as a manufacturer.
What I'm stuck to saying is that everybody wants to be AMAC. No one wants to be the person in the Mechonica factory that's actually making the boat.
Of course not. It's awful.
But the reality
to build boats.
The reality is, I would never want to build boats commercially. I'm fine as a
hobby. I wouldn't want to do it as a hobby either. It's the crazy reason I'm doing it.
Yeah, exactly. So when are we going to see a Bethwaite boat?
I don't know that you ever will. I'm serious. So I think if it's... Because it is... It appears to be quite a radical concept. I think if it works... You'll see it. If it doesn't, you will not see it, just like you didn't see the Bethwaite A-class cat.
What? It was a birthplace. Absolutely classy.
Absolutely. Did you see it?
No.
I did.
Or is it going to be like,
did you see the high speed project number 17?
Oh, I'm still there. All over the place. Is it going to be like the foiling 49er? Two or three photos of it foiling photos. Not video.
Look, I think, to be honest, you know, I've really given credit for the 49er and 29er, and they've made some really good bikes. At the same time, they've learned with some other things, and what did they learn with this Moth, or what did they learn with High Speed Projects or the A-Class Cat that ended up cut up? I don't know, but end of the day, it doesn't really matter, because it's just good to see development, and if it goes anywhere, then so be it. If it doesn't, then it's great, because somebody's trying something different.
Is the problem the name? The fact that it's Julian and Harry Brathwaite doing it, as opposed to a father and his son?
You know, it is, I mean, a problem. It has to be.
If it was anyone else, it was just a dad.
It's actually more his dad doing it.
Yeah, but I'm saying if it was just a dad and their son that were out, let's build a Moth. Let's design a Moth and just for fun. Let's design a Moth and build it, which I'm sure has happened. That happened in our house. Hasn't happened in yours. So, assuming that happened, that's happened. And that no one would care whether it's commercially a success or if it's fast or not. They would say, oh, it's just a guy who's out having some fun. But because their name happens to be Brathwaite, there's instantly
there's the expectation
will be good, that it's going
to be, it has to be good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. But the funny thing is that I find is that typically people that haven't actually met the Brathwaites will have possibly a different opinion about them than people that actually have.
Yeah.
You know, I find that the opinion about the Brathwaites in Australia is very different to the opinion about the Brathwaites overseas. And I think that maybe because the Australian people have seen them fail in some of their projects, that they, you know, maybe they're harsher critics. But the European guys just see what's exported, and what is exported is typically good.
Yeah.
And because, you know, some of the stuff has been fantastic. You know, I've sailed the 49 a number of times, and it's a great boat. It's fantastic. It's got its problems. It's not perfect. But overall, I'd say it's a good product. I think you've got it right.
I know, personally, I really view Brathwaite's more on Julian's 18-footer success than anything else.
Yeah, and you know, I have my doubts about one thing, and that's that, you know, as a skiff designer, I think is very good, obviously. But it's very different to designing hydrofoils and moths. And you can be a fantastic skiff designer, you can be a fantastic yacht designer, but understanding foiling moths and foiling is different again. Just because you're good at one thing doesn't mean you'll be fantastic at understanding foiling as well.
Yeah.
And I think that's problematic, because it's happened, you know, we've seen it happen. We've seen it with American Scup Yacht, you know, designers that come into the moth class, design foils, and they're not really as great as they should be.
Speaking of America's Cup, how good has this little sailing of the Louis Vuitton series been?
Do you know what? I haven't watched any of it.
I haven't watched any of it.
Do you know why? Because after the trimaran and the catamaran, it's just boring.
No.
How can you be excited about
it's really dull-looking
yachts that haven't changed in appearance over the last probably 10 years?
So you haven't watched any of it?
No.
Okay. We're going to pause, and I'm going to show you a race. We'll come back. Back. So the concept of the racing is two boats that are identical.
Yeah.
And the team swap boats. The teams jump on, zip on their sponsorship so the boat looks like their boat. But more importantly, the races are short and close, and the TV camera puts you right in the cockpit.
Yeah.
Right? So to me, that is exactly how you should cover an event from a media point of view.
Yeah.
It's close, it's all that sort of thing, orchestrated, so that sort of thing. So, that racing to me is what race sailing should be. You can watch that, it's close, it's not.
There's only one problem.
What's that?
The boats.
Yes, yes, it'd be
beautifully covered. Beautifully covered. Great sailors.
Do you want you want them all to be 90 foot multi hulls?
Well, what would you rather watch? Two identical multi hulls, 90 foot multi hulls, or these two?
You want it?
You know, America's Cup boats? Nah.
You know, actually, I think I'd rather watch two 60 foot multi hulls.
I'd rather watch two 18 foot multi hulls.
I'd rather watch. I'd rather watch. Yeah, Tequila identical boats.
Yeah, so identical is a good idea.
So I think it'd be good to take the whole... Because one of the huge parts of the America's Cup in match racing is the design of the boat. Much of the... So I think if you took that out of the equation and you basically drew boats and...
I think the problem with America's Cup boats is that the whole design thing is just... I just don't find it exciting. It was exciting with the trimaran and the catamaran.
Yeah.
But with the standard yachts, it's just not that fascinating.
So I think, you have a choice. You have a choice. You can have a design race, or you can have a boat race.
Yeah, that's right. So if you're going to have a design race, why not do it on something a little bit more exciting, which is what they did with the multi-hulls.
Yeah.
But if you're going to have a boat race, well... Yeah, you can do that with the multi-house too. I mean, that'd be more exciting as well.
Yeah, so...
You know, you want to see him go fast, don't you?
Yeah. But it's interesting to actually see some nice, close...
The racing's excellent.
Yeah,
It's nice and close.
So I think it'd be... Also, if you're looking to cover an event from a media point of view, you need to look at those sort of events and see the sort of camera work they do. So if you think of the Moth class, you know, and it covering itself... If we actually had the top 10 boats, and we actually put cameras onboard cameras on those top 10 boats, and cut together the racing from that. Even if it's a class, we said, okay, we're going to pick these 10 boats are going to have to carry a camera. Everyone else has to carry a weight the same as the camera when you put on every boat. The amount of coverage we could get from that from a class of actually putting that racing on and cutting a package together afterwards, I think it'd be...
Well, maybe, you know, for Belmont, I think there's a few people that are working on something similar, so let's hope we get pretty good coverage like we did last time, right?
Yeah, so, but I think there's... I think the Anarchy coverage is good, but then there's another level up of...
Yeah, I think the only problem that I have with Anarchy coverage is I'd love to see it a little bit more professional.
Yeah.
I don't think that you should be proud of the fact that your ass is hanging out of your undies while you... commentating on the Moth race. You know, it kind of...
Saying this as somebody who works for the sponsor, who sponsored the coverage.
Well, you know, it would be better if they brought a little bit more professionalism to it. Having said that, they understood the boats pretty well.
That is Anarchy.
That is sailing Anarchy.
That is their style. If you're going to get sailing Anarchy to cover an event...
Yeah, it's going to be like that.
But I suppose the question is, are people going the sailing Anarchy route... Because there is no other option.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, what else is there?
So I think what everyone would love to see for Belmont is the Salcam TV, the 18-footer guys. The guys that do those races cover the event.
Yeah.
If they can cover if they were covering the Belmont event, the coverage would be just absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, and look, I think Clean did a really good job. But yeah, you can't take it further. And, you know, I wonder if somebody else would go to the extent that they did with editing. You know, some of those videos were pretty sweet. You'd want somebody to do the whole package.
I suppose this is the whole point, really, that Clean makes, is that live on the water internet streaming from a boat is going to be a very different level than post-edited. You know, there's that... Unless you start getting the full outside broadcast, you know, level. What is exciting, though, is the level of electronics that is coming now is you can literally buy... Yeah, I could buy a wireless 3G access point bolted onto my boat. I could be streaming live video off my boat while I'm sailing.
Yeah.
So here's a question for you. Are we putting too much electronics on our boats?
At the moment, probably not.
The whole... GPS, you know, because there's a thread on Anarchy a couple of weeks ago about people want to start tracking. And with your iPhone, right, the new iPhones, they've got accelerometers, they've got gyros in them as well. So GPS, gyros, magnetometers, so compasses.
Yeah, I mean, it's questionable how much all that stuff helps there. It's more of a gimmick, isn't it? I mean, it's kind of nice to know that you're doing 20 knots when you're going downwind, but is it really that useful, that information?
Well, I think from a post-race analysis point of view, it is, but part of my brain being a computer geek starts going, now, what if I actually build a system that controls the wand? But it's been done. Like,
yeah.
The Clive Everest in the UK, he's built an electronic controlled system.
Yeah.
But
if only it was allowed, Bruce.
Oh, you're going to stop me club racing with it. I'm not going to do it.
But
yeah, I was wondering, at some point, do you just say enough is enough? No GPSs? No. We'd be seeing it as any development, wouldn't
it? Yeah, I don't really see it as a problem at the moment, but I hear what you're saying. You don't want it to get out of hand.
Well, it's adding another, $1,000 to the cost of every boat.
I think the cost of every boat is going to go up in the next couple of years. I think it's just... We've just started
it. How did it go up? It's already...
Oh, it'll go up even further. I think it's just heading that way, and unfortunately, nothing's stopping it at the moment. I think every new boat seems to be more expensive than the one that was it was replacing, so...
Does this mean... Okay, so do you think if the prices do keep going up, you're going to see a resurgence in home building as a result?
Not necessarily. I think you'll...
What's happening in other
places? Potentially, you could see less people wanting to get into it, because I'm sure there's people that are deterred by it already.
So what are other classes? What are like 12s or 14s? What's happened with them over time from a cost point of view?
They have lost numbers.
So they've lost numbers. They've gone from a class where people used to home build and tinker and develop to all professionally built,
Much
more expensive boats.
Yeah, and typically, you know, there's professionally built and there's professionally built. You know, you can do a boat in, you know, beautifully made, wet layup, you know, professionally built, and that costs you know, for $20,000 for a 4-inch shell. Or if you're going to do pre-preg, it might cost you 25, or if you're going to go autoclave, then it'll cost you 30. You know, it just, there's different levels of professional boat building. And once you open that door and unlimited or no restriction on cost, I think it could get out of hand. Like, you know, I think the 14s have gotten out of hand a little bit. I think they cost a fair bit of money now.
Yeah.
You know, I would never get into one because of the cost factor. Simple as that.
So do you know if it's possible to now get parts, like get about Mark II foils if you don't own a Mark II? Do you know if it's...
I don't think so.
Because the Moths are an interesting class insofar as that the foils are our boat. So if you can, as you know, if you can just get foils and build your own hull, then you could actually build a very competitive package.
Yeah, that'll help the class. I mean, the problem is that not everybody has the time to go and build themselves the boats.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of time. And
or you can get a second-hand boat and upgrade it.
You can.
That's right.
I mean, that sort of thing helps the class. I think it would really help the class if you had a
foil
manufacturer that mass-produces foils. That's what I'm trying to say. If you had that would be fantastic for the class. And if they were competitive, of course, they had to be competitive. So in other words, Mark II goes and starts selling foils to anybody. I think that would be good for the class.
So do you think
necessarily very good for Mark II, because less people will buy brand new boats. Because why would you buy a whole boat when you can just buy the foils?
Well, then
that's the problem. It's
so why is there not a company that just sells foils and not whole boats?
There should be. There should definitely be a company that just sells company. There should be a company.
Come to me.
It should all come to me. There should be a company that sells for us, absolutely.
So,
what are you thinking there, Bruce?
No. So the moral of this podcast is, if you're thinking about getting into the moth business, build foils, don't build boats.
Is this a trim of like personal?
No.
No.
Interesting. My foils have not proven to be competitive.
No.
But, yeah. Interesting. I think we're done.
I think we're done.